The Theosophical Society presents Jeffrey Hodson in a talk entitled An Adventure into the Fourth Dimension.
Friends, does the fourth dimension really exist? Is there such a thing? And if there is, can we possibly know anything about it? Perhaps by means of some abnormal supersensory powers? Before these questions can be answered, we must know what is meant, what is actually meant by the word dimension when it is used in this mathematical sense. You know, it doesn't mean size. It means a direction of space. At present, we can only imagine easily three directions, those of length, breadth, and height. The room in which you may be listening to me is a three-dimensional structure. It has length, breadth, and height. Now, at once, a very interesting fact presents itself, for each of these three directions, as you will note, is at right angles to the other two. And that takes us straight away to the very heart of the mystery of the fourth dimension. If it exists, it must be at right angles to the other three known dimensions. That's the key, the mathematical key, to the whole problem. That I repeat that if there is such a thing, if there is a fourth direction of space, then it must be at right angles to our familiar three. Try to think of it. Try to imagine it, and you will see how difficult it is to do so. Can a fourth dimension be actually visualized in the mind, as it were? Modern scientific methods and discoveries indicate that something like a fourth direction of space must exist and indeed can be conceived. And this suggests an extension of human knowledge of the universe into directions hitherto quite unknown by men, apart, of course, from the world's great occult scientists and seers. Theosophy teaches that human evolution is, in fact, freeing man from the limitations of his present three-dimensional universe and revealing to him another kind of world, or rather an altogether new human conception of the world as it has hitherto been thought of, a space-time combined, space and time combined, that sort of a world. What would we find then if we became endowed with fourth dimensional sight? That would indeed be an adventure, wouldn't it? Let us approach this fascinating subject gradually and by easy stages, beginning, for example, with zero or no dimension. In mathematics, this is indicated by a point which has position, you'll remember, and no size. Now, if we move our point for, say, 12 inches, we get a line 12 inches long and consisting of an infinite number of points. That line mathematically represents one dimension or one direction of space. If we then move our line for 12 inches, in a direction at right angles to the original one, that is to say, either up or down, then we get a square, which consists of an infinite number of lines. This, the square, is a symbol of two dimensions, or flatland, as it is sometimes called. As we shall see in a minute, it would be very strange to live in flatland, for we would only know length and breadth, the surface of things. Up and down would be inconceivable to us. However, we men of today have at least grown beyond that. We can conceive of height, and looking at a flat photograph, for example, we can in our minds turn it into a picture in depth. An animal, a dog, for example, cannot normally do that. Supposing you show your pet dog a still portrait of his master, it'll be quite meaningless to him, simply because his mind is limited in some ways to two dimensions, particularly as far as flat pictures are concerned. It is of interest, however, that some dogs can recognize pictures of moving people and animals projected onto a cinema screen. Evidently, the additional factor, you might almost call it a direction or dimension, the additional factor of motion evidently enables some animals visually to turn the flat images into three-dimensional objects. This is sometimes shown, you know, by animals barking at something they see and evidently recognize in moving pictures. However, in this our present study, we were still considering the world of two dimensions, consisting only of length and breadth, the realm of flat land, of surfaces only. Now let us proceed. Let us move mentally out of flat land. If we take our square, then, and move it for 12 inches in a direction at right angles to the first two directions, then we will form the outline of a cube, which is a three-dimensional object, having length, breadth, and height, and consisting of an infinite number of squares. Now for the great step into the fourth dimension. As I speak, and you listen, let us take this next natural step. Remember what we have to do? In order to get into the fourth dimension, all we have to do is to continue the procedures which took us from the first into the second dimension and from the second into the third. These, you remember, consisted of motion at right angles to previous directions. So, let us now move our cube in a direction at right angles to the existing three dimensions of space. Well, what has happened? It's impossible, I expect you are saying. Quite so. The mind does normally find it impossible to think of a fourth direction at right angles to the familiar three. So you see, as far as directions of space are concerned, we have just now arrived at the very limit of the powers of the human mind. We just now came to the very threshold of another world, but we were unable to cross it. We couldn't move into the world of four dimensions. Our minds stopped us. Interesting fact, isn't it? Let us then try another method and see if that will help us to get into this mysterious fourth dimension. Instead of geometrical figures, let us think of conscious beings living in each of the dimensions below the third. First of all, a being living in a one-dimensional world, which would, for it, consist only of a single line. Such a creature could only go backwards and forwards. It couldn't turn to the right or to the left, because neither of those directions could be conceived of, and there would be nowhere in the universe in which to turn. Up and down would also be quite beyond its imagination. Supposing two such beings going in opposite directions, one-dimensional caterpillars living in grooves on the surface of a sphere, if you like. Supposing that two one-dimensional caterpillars were out walking and they met head-on. they couldn't pass each other, because for them there would be nowhere to go, for there is no sideways in the line universe, and so there's no means of getting out of each other's way. They could only move backwards and forwards on their line, which for them would be the whole universe, just as for us, what we see in our world of three dimensions is, or seems to be, the totality of existence. And there is no fourth direction of space, or at least we can't conceive of it. Now, we mustn't laugh at these one-dimensional creatures, for we have our own corresponding limitations. In fact, higher dimensions apart, our eyes are deceiving us all the time. At a certain speed of revolution, the spokes of a wheel become blurred and even vanish, as do the blades of an aeroplane propeller under similar conditions. First, the illusion of a disc is produced, and later on, as the revolutions increase, only a kind of transparent mist is seen. Just as the first dimensional creature would regard his experiences as imposed by the nature of space, so do we. But the limitations of our one-dimensional caterpillar have no actual existence, save to his consciousness and to the consciousness of beings like himself, who are thus restricted. Bestow upon one-dimensional caterpillar a recognition of the possible second direction of space, and his line universe with its limitations would disappear altogether. He would then know that it never had any real existence. It was only a cross-section of the whole surface of the sphere upon which he could now move. Even so, a second-dimensional creature, such a dweller in flatland, cannot conceive of up and down. If a bird settled on the surface of his sphere, all he could know or see would be the underside of its feet, which touched his universe, his world of surfaces. If a chalk line were drawn round him on the surface on which he lived, he would believe himself to be entirely enclosed. 1 millimeter of thickness would be enough to give him the impression of being imprisoned in a totally enclosed space from which there was no escape. In the same way, you know, but 1 degree higher, we think we cannot get out of a closed room. If, however, there is a fourth dimension, then the room is open all the time, although we in our turn cannot perceive the way out. So whilst the two-dimensional being is wonderfully liberated compared to one-dimensional creatures, and has what might be called miraculous powers nevertheless, it's still very limited. It cannot leave the surface on which it lives. It couldn't make two oppositely placed draftsman's right-angled triangles coincide, even though it wore its whole life out in the attempt. You see, it can only slide them. And to make them coincide, one must be lifted up and turned and put on top of the other. But this is something of which a two-dimensional being could not possibly conceive. For there is no up and down, no vertical, no third dimensional dimension in flat land, any more than we could think of a fourth dimension in our world. Yes, we humans do have our own limitations. We think the past is finished behind us, and that the future is as yet non-existent. We also can't think how there can be free will if the future already exists. Furthermore, our eyes deceive us constantly. Take, for example, a visit to the cinema. 24 photographs on celluloid are flashed every second onto the screen. Now, in order to achieve a smooth transition from each single picture to the next slightly different picture, the screen is blacked out for 1/48th of a second, whilst the picture is replaced. This means, you see, that for one half of the time a cinema audience is watching a film, it is sitting in total darkness without knowing it. Supposing we estimated the number of man hours spent in the cinema each week by a nation of peoples. Supposing we estimated the man hours weekly in a cinema as perhaps 75 million. Over 37 million of them are spent seeing nothing at all. So you see, we too have our limitations, as also have the one- and two-dimensional creatures, if they existed. Supposing, however, and this is rather an amusing supposition, supposing that two very highbrow, two-dimensional caterpillars got together and began to discuss the possibility of a mysterious third dimension, the realm of the soul, and the abode of departed caterpillars. Supposing even that two-dimensional caterpillars practiced yoga. And supposing still further that they successfully entered the three-dimensional world. How could they describe it to their more limited fellows? Well, they could only say that it is at right angles to length and breadth. But what else would happen to them? This at least. If by meditation a two-dimensional being did enter the three-dimensional world, so that for it this became the normal, then, this is strange, then the first and the second dimensional realms, hitherto the whole universe, would disappear. They would be seen as abstractions, as illusions produced by sense limitations. This is also true of ourselves and our knowledge of the world in which we live. If we should attain to a conception of fourth-dimensional consciousness, what would happen to our own familiar three-dimensional surroundings? They also, it seems reasonable to argue, would melt away into nothingness compared to the fullness of fourth-dimensional perception. And so, theoretically at any rate, we might press on dimension by dimension until infinity within and infinity without is reached and ultimate reality attained. Is there really such a thing as a fourth dimension or direction of space? Theosophy teaches that whilst there are not actually any more than three directions in which space can be measured, there are latent powers of the human mind, which when awakened reveal additional properties of matter. When this happens, and it does happen, whole worlds of knowledge and experience beyond and within those describable by our measurable terms of length, breadth, and height, those worlds can be perceived. What we now call the future then is found to intrude upon the present, which is greatly extended. We then possess that foreknowledge which we call premonition. Probably at the center of the created universe, the lateral, the vertical, and the horizontal are blended into one cosmic direction which includes all. If, by the development and use of our intuition and other powers, we can find our way in consciousness to that elevation and to that center, which, strangely enough, is said to be everywhere and its circumference nowhere, if we could find our way to that mysterious center and heart of all things, then we would know the secret of life, which cannot be fully understood by the intellect alone. To get behind consciousness, with consciousness, that cannot be done, someone has said. The intellect is incurably external. And if we would know more, we have to find a way of developing and using higher powers of cognition than those of the senses and the mind as we now know them. Such supersensory powers do exist in us. They are, for the most part, but not entirely, latent in each one of us. And here is a further most important statement. Such powers can be unfolded ahead of their normal time, and the study of higher mathematics, such as we are beginning, is one of the ways of developing them. The time and space limitations of our normal physical existence can be overridden. The omnipresent here and the eternal now can be known by man. In the process, the immortal, eternal, spiritual soul of man is revealed. What is found then? What is discovered when spiritual consciousness is entered? Mystics and seers who have achieved this unite in testifying to an entry into a most brilliant and supernal light, that light which never was on sea or land, the consecration and the poet's dream, as Wordsworth describes it. The center of self-awareness and of observation in that higher world is known as a more brilliant focus of light within a vast and shoreless sea of light, amidst which other centers, representing the egoic selves of other men, are to be seen. A great intensity of existence and activity, combined with perfect equipoise and ease, are also experienced. Furthermore, there is no sense of resistance in that higher consciousness, duality having been reduced to a minimum. And then there comes uttermost certainty concerning the immortality, the indestructibility of the true self of man, the purpose of human existence, which is evolution to the stature of the perfect man, is fully known, and the fact of the unity of all life, and the family relationship of all living beings. These theosophical teachings are experienced, known as fundamental verities by every reasonably evolved immortal self of man or spiritual ego. Bereavement, then, separation, loss of loved ones are impossible at this level of consciousness, where neither time nor space can limit the free play of the human intellect. Intimate mutual attunement, characteristic of human relationship at the egoic level, provides a complete assurance that the unity thus established, especially with those who have become particularly beloved, that oneness, that unity can never be broken. Such experiences as those of friendship returned, love fully reciprocated, and the complete comprehension of a truth, a work of art, and another human being, these experiences of the physical personality indicate the exhilaration and the happiness which are prominent characteristics of spiritual awareness after self-realization. The inner self, then, of man knows itself to be an eternal, immortal, and indestructible center of divine power, life, and light. These well up within it as from an inexhaustible divine source and shine all about it as a radiant aura glowing with many hues. Such, friends, in part, as revealed from a study of theosophy and testable by personal experience, such is the condition of consciousness of the fourth dimensional condition of man, really his immortal spiritual self, the eternal being within.